This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, we feature an exclusive interview with Race to Alaska race boss Daniel Evans, and then we get a sneak preview of the taste of Port Townsend. So now, let's go inside the Compass.
We've had three dismassings. We have a 58% dropout rate over the last 2 years. The oldest racer is 72. What may become the youngest racer is named Carrie. Where is she? Is she here?
No.
Team Chunk? What?
Sleeping.
She's sleeping. Good honor. Sleep while you can. These stats for me represent two very distinct elements of this race. One is that we know it's dangerous, and we know it's really, really hard. And you've come with that in mind, just like I have had that in mind this entire year. The other is that it's fun. This is an opportunity, and I hope that you see it as well, to do something you don't normally get to do, you may never be able to do again, well, except for you returners, you alumni, you keep coming back. This for me, as someone who's just been the race boss, who has not been able to yet do the race, has been life-changing for me. One of the reasons it's been life-changing is because I got to meet you all. I have never met so many heroes that come from so many different bolts of cloth. It's incredible. I have never met so many characters that have found really odd ways to get themselves into really funny positions and then figure out how to get themselves out. You are an inspiration to me, and I am doing my job when I'm translating that inspiration to everyone out there who is watching you do this. So I want to say thank you all. I think we should give a hand for all of you.
750 miles, no motors, no support, read the slogan projected on a screen behind race boss Daniel Evans as he addressed the motley crew of adventurers that packed the Margin G. Shields American Legion Hall auditorium for the skipper's meeting before the outset of the third annual race to Alaska, concisely stating the grueling challenge the contestants had all willingly signed up for, many for the second or third year in a row. In fact, there were more entries from more places than either of the first 2 years of the race, of which former Outward Bound trainer and schooner adventurous Captain Evans is a co-founder. I managed to corner Evans in his office at the Maritime Center just before the skipper's meeting for a brief interview about this year's race, which is now underway. What is a race boss? What do you do?
The race boss was my self-proclaimed title since I'm one of the co-founders of the race, and I run the race. Yeah, I'm in charge of kind of everything that has to do with the race, from top to bottom.
Well, let's talk about who gets to race. Are you the person who decides that as well?
No, I'm part of a team that decides that. There is a vetting process that goes through that's based a lot on like the types of watercraft people are choosing and their experience, whether they're choosing to do leg one or the full race. So there's a vetting process that does happen, of which I'm part of.
So if you find somebody who really seems like they're not experienced enough with whatever craft they're going on, is that, I mean, like let's say, for example, somebody has, you know, spent their life as a pilot of ferries, mm-hmm. And now they want to take a paddleboard to Alaska.
Right, exactly. I mean, there needs to be some relevant experience. And while, a lifetime on a ferry certainly gains you some experience, it may not be appropriate for the race to Alaska. I think a lot of it is that the people that come on the race are adventurers. I mean, a number of them, their experience is in just kind of that kind of crisis-oriented environment. Those places where you go where you have to make real decisions about what you're doing. Mountain climbing is one of those. Certain situations in foreign countries can be one of those. Sailing, certainly one of those. And so we look at all of it. When we ask for an adventure resume, it's like, just what have you done in your life? Because part of what we're looking for is their ability to make sound decisions. And in the heat of battle, as it is, Boat choice is tied into that. What type of boat that they're wanting to do it in, what type of, you know, sailing experiences they do have, those will all tie in into what the success of the entrant or not.
So, I mean, I'm sure that you've had some applications to enter that have been kind of borderline. You want to describe any of those?
I mean, I'd like to keep it general, but yeah, we've had people that have kind of home-built backyard scientist boats that, you know, they just haven't been, and new builds, so they've never really even been tried out. And you know, this is not a place to try out a new home-built boat. The seas are far too rough and conditions far too harsh for it to be a trial run. So we do get some of those, and then frankly, we get some people that have what I would characterize as a misperception of their skills. Maybe it's that they don't understand really the gravity of what this race is and the conditions that and what it calls for as a sailor and adventurer, or they just have a different idea of their background that I'm not seeing as well. So. Most times when I talk to people, I think they come to understand why I've made the choice. And one of my favorite was once, it was the first year that there was a team that wanted to go all the way, and I called them up and I said, and we chatted for a while, and I said, you know, I just can't accept your application to go all the way. And they said, oh, thank God, I was so scared. Thank God you're saying no. And you know, they've continued to be a part of the race and a real character in the race and have done stage one. And great to have them.
Well, so last year there was a team that all of the members were paraplegic.
That's correct.
Did that give you pause?
Absolutely. Did it give me pause? Yeah, completely. And again, it tied into how much the background they really had in experience and what they were willing to do. But it created some great deliberation among the vetting team. Yeah. And I'm happy that we made the choice we did. Absolutely. They're great sailors, great people. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about the entries this year. Can you give me a brief sort of like outline, like how many contestants there are and what the range of craft are?
Yeah, for sure. There's going all the way to Ketchikan, there's 37. Then there's a separate 22 that are just doing the first leg from here to Victoria. Out of the 37 that are going all the way, I think it's pretty impressive. There's 20 of them are at 20 feet or under, and a whole bunch of those are single-handing, which is very interesting. So we've seen like people going to smaller craft to try and do this event. Also, for the first time ever, we have three stand-up paddleboards five are doing leg one, but three are trying to go all the way. We've never had that before. Last year, we had one stand-up paddleboard try it, but broke their board day three, and that's Team Heart of Gold. They're back this year with a new board, and they're trying to make it to Ketchikan. And I think that's going to be really interesting. I also think there's no, while in past years you could look at the fleet and think, oh, that's going to be a clear winner, or, you know, if it's sailed right, it's really going to take it. I don't think there's a clear winner this year. There's a couple of boats that, depending on how they're sailed, could be real winners. And so I'm looking forward to the drag out match that may come as they sail north.
Weren't the winners both of the first 2 years trimarans?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I think it's been proven in the last 2 years that the multi-hulls are likely going to take it, for sure. But also in the last 2 years, it's been a mono-hull that's taken second and beaten out all the other trimarans. So it's going to have to do with how well things are sailed. But my guess is that it's going to be a multi-hull that takes the first place prize again this year. But I just don't know which one.
Let's go back to talking about the smallest boats. I mean, like a paddleboard. I would guess that the people who are going on a paddleboard don't really think they're going to win the race.
Yes, that's correct. Most people don't think they're going to win the race. By and large, I think we confuse people by calling it a race at all. You know, there is a prize. There's a first place. There's a second place. But most of the teams that enter are entering it to complete it. I mean, their race is kind of an inward race. It's their challenge against them to make it to Ketchikan, and it's my honor to be able to celebrate that story as far north as they can make it. I mean, for me, they're flat out heroes for just trying. I don't even care how far they make it. It's incredible, but to make it up there the whole way, it's a huge feat. And so you're right in that they're not coming thinking that they're going to take the prize, those stand-up paddleboarders, but they're coming to create an experience in their life that's probably unparalleled to anything they've done.
Let's talk about your day tomorrow and then over the next few days. What do you do as the race boss? I mean, actually, give me a sort of like game plan for yourself.
Well, over the next few days, you know, tomorrow being the race start, I stand up what's called an operation center. We call it kind of the war room, but essentially I create a space out of three rooms that monitors the race, the whole stage one of the race. And there's about 12 of us that are involved in that, and a lot of screens. And then we're managing 10 boats out on the water that are helping support the race through observation and aid if necessary. We're also working in cooperation with the United States Coast Guard, the Canadian Coast Guard, and a number of search and rescue agencies, including the local East Jefferson Fire and Rescue, who will have a boat out on the water with their trained crews as well. And so I often say this race is unsupported, but it's not unsupervised. And this first leg for sure is supervised because we call it the proving ground. This is, you have 36 hours to make it to Victoria. This is where things are going to break, because this is a big body of water. It can be really nasty out there. And I'm looking for people that are going to try and maybe not make it. But I want to be there to make sure that if they fail, they're going to fail safely. And so this leg, especially, we're watching out for them and following them on the tracker and keeping in communication through all of our vessels. And the following days after that, when everyone gets into Victoria, it's kind of like a multi-day party for a while until we have another skipper's meeting. But until Sunday, the next race start. And they'll take off at high noon, hit that bell, they'll go running down to their boats and take off. Then I'll hop in a boat myself. And I'm going to follow them. And it's just really, I'm following them just to really record their stories. But we don't necessarily have like safety teams out there watching them after that.
What kind of boat are you following them in?
45-foot steel powerboat. Yeah. Lots of engine, no sail. Yeah.
I see. And so you will buzz around and sort of check on each of them in turn over the course of the next few days and land up in Ketchikan yourself?
Yeah, in general. Like, you never know what's going to happen because the weather is going to dictate how the boats spread out or how far they might go. And if they're really, really fast, I wouldn't be able to catch them anyway, even in this powerboat. But I like go out, check in, see how they're doing. And I like to tell their story. And so we're going to tell that story on our website. We're going to tell the story on Facebook. We're going to be doing some podcasting. And we have a media team that's putting together video clips for every day that it's happening. So they're going to be out there getting a lot of footage. And we will all eventually end up in Ketchikan, and hopefully all the teams too.
So remind me, last year the winner came in and what time, and then the last person to make it in came in how much later?
The winner last year was Team Mad Dog, and they made it in roughly 3 days and 20 hours. It was an incredible speed. The final finisher for the race was Team Cantankerous. They made it in just over 25 days. The great difference between the two, which is really interesting, is that Team Mad Dog averaged about 10 knots or 10 nautical miles an hour of speed. And Team Cantankerous averaged 1, which is about half the speed of a walking dog.
And of how many entrants make it? How many dropped out, in other words?
We had, on average over the last 2 years, 58% have dropped out. More in the first year than in the second year. But yeah, we're looking at a pretty heavy dropout rate.
Right, and what's the long-term weather forecast look like for next week?
For next week? Oh, I don't look at that. I mean, it's not like I can. This thing is a beast of its own. Once we open the gate, it goes trotting out no matter what. So whether or not, I'll face it when I come to it. I have to deal with tomorrow's weather first.
Which actually is supposed to rain tomorrow for the first day in a long while.
That's right.
Yeah, it's going to rain. It's like 97% probability. So, it's great. We're all waterproof. But, and then a little wind out of the south, and then it's supposed to blow up pretty hard out of the west.
I understand that this year, once again, people will be carrying spot GPS trackers, and it'll be possible to go online and and follow the race?
Absolutely. Each team will be carrying a spot tracker, and you can go online at r2ak.com, and there's a button there that says tracker, and you just hit that, and it'll open up a screen, a map, and you'll be able to follow all your teams. You'll be able to check their Facebook straight from the map, and it's free to all 24 hours a day.
As predicted, race day dawned gray and drizzly, and by mid-morning, strong westerly winds with gusts up to 50 knots and 3-meter waves were hampering progress, particularly for the sailboats toward Victoria, BC, the destination for the first qualifying leg of the race. One boat capsized and had to self-rescue before continuing, and several decided to camp the night and finish the next morning. And for the first time, it was a human-powered craft, not a sailboat, that was the first to make it to Victoria, a 2-man rowboat from France named Team Lifeboat. With race boss Daniel Evans, this is Steve Evans reporting for KPTZ Community Radio News. Thinking of going out for dinner and drinks? Confused by all the choices Port Townsend has to offer? Well, there's one night each year when choosing isn't really necessary because many of the town's finest food and drink purveyors come together for the benefit of Port Townsend's Main Street program to produce a big bash known as Taste of Port Townsend, where, for a flat price, you can sample offerings from a dozen eateries and almost as many cideries, wineries, and breweries. This year's event takes place at the Maritime Center on the evening of Thursday, June 15th, and I met with Main Street Program Executive Director Mari Mullen and several of this year's participants one recent morning upstairs at Aldrich's Market, which is a new participant in the Taste event this year. Mullen started off with introductions.
We're really excited to talk about the 25th Taste of Port Townsend in support of our Main Street program. To my right is Sandy Spencer. She has the Lively Olive Tasting Bar, and she's also on our Main Street board. Her right is Kim Sands, and she's one of the co-owners of Port Townsend Brewing Company. Wonderful beer made right here in town. And to her right is Scott Rogers, and he is one of the new owners of Aldridge's Grocery, and he also has Dogs Afoot, and he's on our board. And Sandy and he are helping organize the Taste of Port Townsend. And then to his right we have Nancy Bishop from Alpine Fire Cider. And we have new, you know, at the Taste is cider, wine, and beer tasting, so Nancy's representing the tastings of festive beverages as Kim as well.
Why don't you tell us what the Taste of Port Townsend is and how it got started?
You know, the Taste got started in 1991, I believe, out at the fairgrounds, and it was all the restaurants under one roof there at the fairgrounds at the Erickson building, and then it outgrew that space, and then it moved back into the restaurants, and it was like a tasting tour. People went around to the restaurants, and that was a lot of fun, but it was also very weather-dependent, so if it was raining, you know, people were reluctant to go traipsing around to the restaurants. And so last year we reinvented it and moved it back under one roof again to the Northwest Maritime Center. And so it's got a beautiful view and it's not weather dependent. And we added in the, in addition to food, the wine, beer, and cider tastings. And so about 220 people came last year and enjoyed the event, and it got rave reviews, and we're doing it again. And we're just so grateful to all our generous participants. And it's really, you know, Scott described it, it's just really like a community party. It is really a fun, delicious event. And it supports our Main Street nonprofit and all the work we do year round.
All right. Well, so why don't we go around in turn and each of you tell me who you are and what you're providing and why.
Yes, I'm Sandy Spencer. I own the Lively Olive Tasting Bar, and I'm actually participating to support the Main Street program. And I'm in charge of the Tasty Prize, and so that's going to be a basket full of goodies all related to food from different businesses in town. And in exchange for, we get your address, and you put in your ticket, and we do the drawing, and somebody's going to win a prize that's worth about $275. Wow. All related to food.
One chance, one prize.
One chance, one prize.
Great. And?
I'm Kim Sands, co-owner of Port Townsend Brewing Company. I'm a former board member of Main Street, so I love supporting Main Street. That's why we do the Taste of Port Townsend. It was nice to be invited back again since they put it all under one roof. We weren't sort of participating because we aren't a restaurant. And so last year was great, and it's a really fun event, and like she said, it's a big party. And we are celebrating our 20 years in business this month,
really?
1 week after the taste. So we've got a brewery in this town for 20 years. Can't believe 20 years went by.
That's amazing. So is there going to be a birthday party?
Yes, we have an anniversary party June 24th on Saturday, and there'll be prize giveaways and lots of fun and music and the food truck, Mo Chili Barbecue.
Who's playing?
The Delta Rays.
Oh, wonderful. And?
I'm Scott Rogers, co-owner of Altridge's and Dogs Afoot downtown.
What's going to be your role in the Taste of Portales?
Having fun, bringing food. From Aldridge's, we're going to emphasize the community. We have dinners with John. John's going to be making his friendship pasta. It's a dish that he makes for all of his friends and when they come to his house for the first time. We're going to be doing hopefully Grey Marsh chocolate strawberries. We have fresh orange juice. We'll be doing mimosas. But mostly it's going to be... For us, it's going to be about promoting community and having everybody come and be under the same roof and having a good time together. Then, of course, Dogs Afoot will have our hot dog bites. Oh, and Mari just pointed out, we'll also have sushi from Sushi Ichiba. And that's our sushi restaurant in the loft at Aldridge's.
Great, thanks. And finally...
I'm Nancy Bishop, co-owner of Alpen Fire Cider, and this is our first time at Taste of Port Townsend, and we're really looking forward to being there. We will have cider, of course, several different varieties, and also for the people that buy the non-alcohol tickets, we will have vinegar tastings and fruit shrubs to try.
Vinegar tastings?
Yeah. We make a full line of vinegars. And with some of that vinegar, we also make fruit shrubs, which is fruit, vinegar, and sugar concentrates.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, so now, Mari, I understand that the Taste of Port Townsend is a major, if not the major, fundraising event each year for the Main Street.
Well, we refer to it as our signature fundraiser because it has the most involvement from other businesses, and it takes about 35 volunteers to put it on, and so it's something that, you know, it is a nice fundraiser for us, and it's something that is poised to grow. Like, we can really imagine it at the Maritime Center, renting all the rooms at the Maritime Center and spilling out onto the plaza, you know, with food tents and having a band and dancing. I mean, you know, in the future, like when we really get it growing. So, but it's an important event for us, but it's also a way to showcase our fantastic local restaurants and local beverage providers. So we are just so blessed in Port Townsend. I'm telling you, I travel across the state through my Main Street work, and we have restaurants and cideries and beer and wine covered here in our town. We're really lucky. For a town of 9,300 people, we are very blessed, and the taste is a little slice of that delightful piece of heaven that we have here. So.
Now, is this an event that is marketed far and wide beyond Port Townsend, or is it really kind of a homegrown, home-centered event?
I would say it's more a homegrown and home-centered. We do work with Christina Pavarnik, our lodging tax marketing coordinator for Port Townsend, and she has it on her newsletters and sends it out, but we don't do paid advertising outside of the city, so it is, I would say, mostly locals who come to the event.
And what is it that the Main Street program does? I mean, what beyond just the Taste of Port Townsend?
You know, Steve, we just are the busiest crew that you can even imagine. We clean the Cotton Building restrooms every day. That is a little known fact, but we
really?
Do. Yes, we do. And we just are taking care of 120 hanging flower baskets downtown, uptown, and Castle Hill, and out by the poorhouse. We have concerts on the dock starting July 13th, where we serve fantastic local beer from PT Brewing and cider from Alpen Fire and Finn River. And we have retail-oriented events that are supporting local shopping, like Girls Night Out and the holiday promotion. We just wrapped up Art Wave, which was about 700 pieces of children's art in the stores. There were 200 pieces of art just at the post office, so I hope people got a chance to see that. Yes. So, you know, we work all year long. We had Earth Day in April, and we planted up Adams Street Park. We take care of Adams Street Park and all the downtown gardens as well. And then we have some business assistance funds. We have the Lent Revolving Loan Program, which is a microloan program for businesses in the historic districts if they have an emergency, like their water boiler bursts and they need just a small loan, they can apply to the Main Street program for that. And we also have the HUD Loan Revolving Loan Program, which supports historic preservation and facade improvements. So a lot of the buildings in downtown and uptown have received a HUD loan. And, you know, then it causes this ripple effect of one building is all painted and looks really beautiful, so then the next door neighbor, you know, wants to look as good. So that's just a little insight there.
Wow, it's a broad portfolio.
Yes.
So what's new this year about any...
Well, we have new participants this year. We've got... let's see, who do we have that's new? We have Jane Doe's Shortbread, and Pane d'Amour is new, and Aldridge's Market, and Scott talked a little bit about their offerings, and Alpen Fire Cider is new, and the Spice and Tea Exchange is new, so we've got several new businesses, but we changed it up so much last year, we felt like that was kind of enough change for right now, so we want to keep going for a couple of years with this new format, and then have it catch on.
Oh, I just wanted to add one thing. Pre-sales actually have early access to the venue. So if you buy online, you can actually get in at 5 o'clock.
By June 12th.
Yes, you must purchase your tickets by June 12th. You can get in at 5 o'clock, so that's a pre-entry. And then at 6 o'clock, we will be selling tickets at the door.
Very good. And so the actual event begins and ends when?
It's on Thursday, June 15th. It starts at 5 o'clock and ends at 8 o'clock. People might want to know where they can buy tickets, and they can get them at ptmainstreet.org, at Safeway, at Aldridge's, at Glow Natural Skincare on Monroe Street, and we also thank SOS Printing and Cisco Foods for their sponsorship.
Participants in this year's Taste of Port Townsend include Aldrich's Market, Silverwater Cafe, Siren's Seafood Bar, Taps at the Guardhouse, The Tin Brick, The Belmont, Cable House Beach Canteen, Dogs Afoot, The Old Whiskey Mill, Pont d'Amour, Port Townsend Fudge Company, Jane Doe Shortbread, The Boiler Room, Alpen Fire Cider, Eagle Mount Wine and Cider, Fairwinds Winery, Finn River Cidery, Maristone Winery, Port Townsend Brewing Company, Propolis Brewing, the Spice and Tea Exchange, and Sunrise Coffee Company. This is Steve Evans reporting for KPTZ Community Radio News. This week's KPTZ Compass was written and produced by Steve Evans. You can listen to podcasts of past Compass programs at the kptz.org website, where you can also stream KPTZ live 24 hours a day. KPTZ Compass is dedicated to going into the community to bring the stories from the community to the attention of the rest of the community. If you're a community-minded person and consider yourself something of a storyteller besides, perhaps you'd like to join us. We stand ready to train promising people in the subtle arts of radio journalism. If you think this might be the right kind of creative work for you, please stop by the station at the Mountain View Commons to talk with us and fill out a volunteer application. And remember, if you have a news tip or story idea of any kind, send an email to news@kptz.org. That email again for news tips is news@kptz.org. For the news team here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, I'm Steve Evans.